for humane renewal from a more decentralized church. Vatican spokesman Federico Lombardi said Francis wrote the bulk of the document in August. The apostolic exhortation bundles many of the themes the Argentine-born pontiff has raised since his papal election in March. This time, Francis goes further in his criticism of the global economic system and urges politicians to attack the structural causes of inequality and to strive to provide work, healthcare, and education for all. Thailand's premier has invoked a special security law in the capital Bangkok and nearby areas after protesters stormed key ministries in a bid to topple the government. The special law gives police additional powers to block roads, impose a curfew, ban gatherings, and search people. The mass rallies against Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat and her brother, ousted Premier Thaksin Shinawat, are the biggest since 2010.
To believe so many people in this nation
are willing to vote with such little information.
They don't know much about Sarah Palin.
She's a woman.
And that may be all they need to know. What was that Trooper Gate mess way up there in Alaska?
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
She's a pit bull with lipstick.
And that may be all we need to know. So many questions about that bridge to nowhere. Where did all that money go?
And behind beauty pageant looks, did she try to ban library books?
The world may never know.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
What are they going to pay? And that's up to their decision whether they're going to pay this, that, or the other, which includes Social Security. That does not mean money is not in Social Security. It means that when they have the options of we've got to make a payment, they can decide, I'm not paying this, I'm paying that. That's what I said. And that's what the president said. And that's a fact. That does not mean, nor did anyone say, that Social Security caused the deficit. We're saying the choices they're going to make if they're in default.
But you got to you're not clarifying that. Because, you know,
that's exactly what I said, sir.
It's $14 trillion in debt as far as the military and the wars, with $52 trillion in debt as far as assistance program. That those are two separate things.
That has not one iota to do with what I just said or what I said before. I said if they default, they decide on what they're going to pay based on what they have. You talking apples, I'm talking oranges.
But shouldn't he have been made these decisions?
Now you're talking about something different. Okay. You get on the radio.
Okay, here we go.
Distort what I said and said that we mislead people. You're misleading people. What I said was that if they default, that they then have to choose what they're going to pay. Is that true or not?
How is it that he takes
I asked you a question. I'm going to ask you one more time and I'm going to the next call. Is that true or not?
Well, you entwine them too.
I'm not implying nothing. I'm asking you a question. If they default, will they not have to choose what bills they're going to pay based on what reserve they have? Is that true or not?
He presented his plan.
So you're trying to double talk. I answered you straight. Answer me straight. Is that true or not?
Some of what you're saying is true. Some of what you're saying is false.
What is not true? What is not true, sir?
What
is not true? If they default, then they don't have to choose what they're going to pay.
Bottom line, he cannot take from Social Security because that money does not come out of Social Security. Let's address it that way. That money comes out of the taxpayers' money for them to put aside. That money is set aside in a lockbox to be and for them to have when, at the time of their retirement or things of that nature. That has nothing to do with that.
It comes out of the lockbox, sir. Do you know what you're talking about? It comes out of the lockbox into the federal government to pay its bills on a monthly basis. That's like saying if I have some money that is in a different account that funnels into my regular account to pay my bills, of course it doesn't mean you deal with the lockbox, but it means when it comes out, that money becomes in my general account that pays my bills, and I may decide to pay my phone bill rather than my gas bill.
Yeah, that means you'll be stealing from one end to your pot and putting it in the next pot. That's basically what you'll be doing, stealing from it, unless the money is not there, unless the money already been spent.
The whole point we're saying, which is why we're saying that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid should not be touched. That is exactly what we've been saying. What he is saying is that if they are in default, he has to choose what they're going to pay based on what is in the reserve. How many times I got to tell you the same thing?
But the problem is he should have already made those decisions. If we take in $200 billion a month and he spends...
He should have made what decisions if we're in default? If we're in default...
People know the truth. Around that, the people know the truth.
You're lying. You're lying. That is not the truth. The people, the money that comes in, sir, you're lying. Let's be clear. Let me be real clear. What you're saying is a lie. Because default has nothing to do with what you're talking about. If they're in default... They're in default. You're talking like we're saying that everything is normal and level. We're talking about if they default next Tuesday, if that becomes the card date.
All of our prices that we pay in these stores, prices are going to go up if we go up the debt ceiling. The prices are already up. It's going to double the prices.
What does that got to do with what we're talking about?
You got to tell them the repercussion and the consequences of raising this debt. You're not telling them that.
Sir.
You're not telling them.
Every time somebody answers a point, you go to somebody. Now you're talking about the prices double. We were talking about how you pay the government bills.
You know that. You're going to cut me off. I got to say what I got
to
say.
No, your problem is I haven't cut you off. I'm letting everybody understand you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. You wanted me to cut you off. I'm letting you talk so people understand that you're just running a lot of rhetoric and don't know what you're talking about.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Rindigina.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? What did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for the smart of the region.
Es aborigen inteligente de radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
This is not about hate white folks. Now you're gonna need more than hate to sustain you when this thing begins. Now if you feel that way, you're no good to us and you're no good to yourself.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Risen human being resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, logging to the fourth world from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neoliteral, neo-fascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earths and love and solidarity to the entire Aboriginal family at this time of strife and struggle. I'm your host, Angry Indian, and I'm here, as always, with our executive producer and engineer, Guadalupe Morales, and we are today broadcasting out of Zig Zag Studios in Bothell, Washington. We're doing an overnight over here, and they were gracious enough to loan us their facilities, to make this possible. So, we'd like to thank you, brothers, man, for that. The Zig Zag Studios. It's a little private studio here for all your hip-hop needs and what have you. So, check them out. Word of mouth does more than an ad. You dig what I'm saying? Because that's how you get quality as opposed to bullshit. So, that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. Man, I'm going to talk about bullshit. All right? I'm going to talk about bullshit amongst, we've been talking about bullshit amongst the left, and we occasionally talk about confusion amongst the left. But today we're going to talk about Africans in particular. And we're going to deal with bullshit. We're going to deal with unnecessary animosity. We're going to try to understand, you and I, maybe if we can, within the time that we're here together, that, we're going to ask ourselves, what is it about black folks that we are so vicious to each other? That we're so belligerent to each other? Especially when it comes to politics. And especially when it comes to people who really don't know what the fuck they're talking about, but they want to argue anyway. And they can't back anything up other than to say that this is their opinion and they're entitled to it. They have nothing else. And what I'm going to talk about later, this is coming down to the confusion that the Republican Party has been doing. Now, you might remember the interview we did not too long ago with Dr. Chris Newhouse. She's the partner to Mike Cadell over at Roger Free Kansas, and I really think you need to go check them out. Radio Free Kansas. Okay? Now you can check them out on Blocks Fighting Cock Flyer at blogspot.com. And, you know, you can go check them out. And, you know, they got a podcast and what have you. But we were speaking to Dr. Chris Newhouse, and we were talking about a woman's right to choose. We were talking about abortion. And, you know, a lot of men really do not understand what goes on when a woman gets pregnant. I mean, she has a hell of a lot of choices to make. She's put into, you know, a real serious position in this really screwed up society that we're surrounded by now, that we've allowed to manifest about us. You know, I mean, it used to be out in the old ways, as long as the environment was able to provide, you could have as many of you wanted, you know, but there's a lot of confusion going on. You know, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to people's beliefs, man, but you have to understand something. You got your belief and you got fact. It's not exactly the same thing. You can believe in a fact if you want to, but the fact is going to remain a fact whether you believe in it or not. Now, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, at The Angry Indian, one word, on Twitter, you can find out what I'm doing over there. You have seen a debate I got into, and I don't know why it even needed to be a debate, but then again, this is what we're going to talk about, why it became a goddamn debate. It was unnecessary. It didn't have to become belligerent, but, you know, there's a lot of folks out here, they already have an idea in their mind, and when you present them with conflicting information that is verifiable, that trumps their information. I'm not talking about the, you know, the nonsense concept of winning. I'm talking about just because it's factual. It is what it is. It's a what is. And they have a particular belief, and they hang on one particular aspect of that belief. You know, the one little tiny factoid that they can. You know, despite the fact that it takes everything else out of context. You know, it is ridiculously difficult to get them to understand where it is that you're coming from. I'm not talking about influencing them. I'm not talking about winning them over to your side. See, that's winning. I'm talking about actually deconstructing and breaking down a problem, a subject, an issue, a concept. Opinion doesn't mean a fucking thing if it's not backed up with anything empirical. I'm sorry for those of you who believe in deities and sky spooks and all kinds of mystery gods and all kinds of conspiracies and shit that really Alex Jones, you know, we all lean on him, but he's not the only one. You got a whole lot of Illuminati bullshit going on in the African community, and a lot of it is actually funneled in through goddamn Alex Jones. Because every time you check their sources, it's always a European. It's always a white guy who has a background within white supremacy, who has a background within, right, some sort of eugenic sort of, you know, worldview, a European eugenic worldview, because Asian eugenic worldview is a little different. It's a little different. It's existent, but it's a little different. It really can't be equated to what Europeans are doing. It needs to be accepted for the Asian context. But this is the point that I'm saying, context. And, you know, very conservative people. I don't give a damn what ethnic group they belong to, what country they come from, what religion they believe in, what philosophy or creed they accept. If you are so bullheaded to only believe, or to want to believe anyway, that your particular perspective is the only perspective, then I'm sorry. Any of, you know, whatever analysis you might come through with is suspect to begin with. For the simple fact that you choose, you make a choice to only see things one way, and you do not follow the research where it takes you. Now, these same people, I'm talking about in terms of African folks now, African folks in the United States anyway. Let's narrow it down to that. Or even Canada for that matter. Let's narrow it down to that. All right? Africans of North America. How's that? You know, within the diaspora, which is, of course, greater than this. You know, we're in the, what was the former Soviet Union. We're all the way in the tip of Argentina at Tierra del Fuego. I mean, we're all over the place. But for political reasons, which is something else I want to bring up in terms of the debate I got into with this person. We're going to talk about North American, Anglophone, right? You know, African people. living within those particular cultural and socio-political constraints. Okay. This particular individual, now I'm not going to name this person because I'm not trying to embarrass them, but you know, all you have to do is go to at The Angry Indian on Twitter and you'll see who I'm talking about, you'll see what I'm talking about, you can read the thread. It just delves into the ridiculous. Because basically, like a great deal of people that I've been dealing with lately, and you know, Lupe, I don't understand this. You know, one fellow, even he's African too, he flat out said to me, you have to accept the fact that you know more than I do on this subject and just deal with the fact that I only see this one way and that's it. And I said, and basically then agree with you by limiting my own argument along with your facts. And he said, yes. Now I'm in my goddamn 50s and this motherfucker's, you know, older than me and used to teach at a leading university in this country, right? In the U.S. So it is what it is, right? It is what it is. Some people will simply never accept the goddamn truth, no matter what you present. They will never accept the negative. And you know, there's really nothing you can do about it. I mean, Stephen Hawking, he called all kinds of hell for his theories. And then when he did come around, about, was it maybe 20 years later, I was telling you, Lupe, in terms of black holes and whether or not matter can actually be destroyed or the information can be retained and perhaps reconstructed theoretically. Well, he admitted, hey, you know, my theory was wrong. Well, I mean, there's still no let up. There's still no, you know, concept that he at least came through. He continued to think about it. And when he came to the conclusion that he was wrong, he admitted it. It also means that he spent more than two fucking decades. Now, we're talking about somebody who doesn't have tomorrow promised to him. You understand what I'm saying? Because of his physical condition. And we're also talking about somebody that was completely goddamn skewered by the fucking pro-Zionist lobby, the pro-Israeli lobby, the anti-Palestinian lobby, the anti-indigenous lobby. See, if black activists in the U.S. started talking about Israel and the amount of money in terms of corporate welfare, in terms of tax money that is being given to Israel to support what they're doing to Palestinians when they should be turning that money into the African community, no, well, see, you have more, you know, respect from me. And when I say respect, I'm not talking about you as individuals. I'm talking about respect ideologically, respect politically. See, you don't talk about that and you don't make these links because you don't look any deeper. You talk about, well, you know, maybe, more than likely, especially if you're, RGB, right? You'll talk about Arab slavery of Africans. You're right. It's the same situation over here. And there are Africans that are still in all of these Arabic countries. Yes, and they still suffer from racism. And there is a definition within these societies between white Arab and black Arab. You're right. But then you stop it there and you don't go any further. You don't go any further. And before somebody jumps to conclusions, because this is the other thing that got me about this particular individual on Twitter today, that wasted most of my goddamn afternoon with this, because I was hoping there was going to be some kind of clarity, right? Because I don't like to block people. But, you know, I thought there was going to be some kind of clarity at some fucking point. No, this person continued to go on. And let me just cut to this, right? Because Lupe's telling me I'm not really getting to the point. And I apologize. The whole thing was about Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. Now, for those of you who don't know, Margaret Sanger was in a really fucked up way, considered the mother of, abortions in the United States. And that's really a fucked up way, and I mean this, it's a really fucked up way to look at her. Now, she was no less and no more racist than any other goddamn white person in the United States at the time period. But there's a simple fact here that needs to be recognized about this. Planned Parenthood served black women in terms of gynecological care, right? I mean, if you're a male, I guess you don't give a shit, right? Until your own, you know, fucking equipment starts to hurt. But, you know, for women, they need someone who can check them out. And it's really ridiculous because I know that males, and I'm sorry, but African males too, they don't give a damn about this. They don't think about it because it's not their problem. But you need to consider that. Planned Parenthood, or consider this anyway, Planned Parenthood treated African women when other clinics would not in many urban centers. That's a fact. They wouldn't take Mi'kmaq, okay? And she took them in. Now, that's a fact. The second fact is, yes, they do perform abortions, but that's not all that Planned Parenthood does. And I don't know how many fucking times I have to say this to people. Planned Parenthood is not just a goddamn abortion mill. Women go there for gynecological care and for birth control. You can get free fucking condoms at Planned Parenthood. If you have no income, you can get free condoms and you can get the goddamn pill. But that's bad, right? No, that's bad. So, you know, I mean, for these people who are totally Afrocentric and totally xenophobic, you know, really, they're not thinking. You know, because this person actually said, look in the timeline, that every abortion of a black person is basically a reduction of the numbers and is therefore genocide. You know, in other words, no matter what the context, no matter that you have a responsible young couple that says, you know what, we can't do this right now because we don't have the means to take care of ourselves, let alone someone else. And they make that decision. You know, this person is equating that to genocide. No, that's not genocide, that's choice. Now, if these women were being forced and coerced into doing this, that's a different case. And in terms of Planned Parenthood, that is not the case. And if that were the case, by simple goddamn mathematics, and you don't have to be a 5%er to understand this, by simple fucking Cartesian goddamn logic, Planned Parenthood is taking care of millions of black women over the decades. If this were true, that they had some plan to, you know, eradicate the African population in the United States, there would be no goddamn African population in the United States. If you did the math. And how can I back this up? Because this person who said in the timeline, read this for yourself. I'm only concerned with black people. Well, see, that's the problem. If you're only concerned with your own group, then you never look anywhere else to actually see if there was even corroborating evidence to support your findings. Now, in the terms of African people and Planned Parenthood, that's a whole lot of bullshit that's been pushed by Republicans and has been pushed by people who were trying to coerce the governments at the time, because you have to remember, eugenics was practiced very heavily here in the United States up until the 1950s in terms of the non-native population, and even some will say the 70s, up until the 70s anyway, with the non-native population. You know, there were thousands of women who were sterilized here. Anybody can do the research on that. That doesn't mean that Margaret Sanger was at the forefront of this movement. And there was a whole lot of people in general that were sterilized, not just black folks, all right? There, you know, a lot of, you know, white people who were considered to be Scots-Irish, Italian, poor, Greeks, right? Russians, you know, Slavs, almost always, if they could get their hands on them, they sterilized them. You know, they were calling themselves leveling out the playing field. And of course there was racism involved, but they were also looking at culling Europeans that they considered to be useless. If they were not Anglo-Saxon Protestants, you know, they could accept Germans maybe, they could accept some Northern Europeans perhaps, you know, especially those that, you know, went into the Thule Society and the Vril Society and what have you, Guido von Liszt, Henry Blavatsky, you know, I mean, really going into that deep, you know, weird ass pan-Germanic form of ultra xenophobia, you know, the black sun and, you know, all of that. But again, you have to do the research to see what, you know, what understand what the hell I'm even talking about, instead of talking about the Illuminati or some other kind of bullshit. You have to understand the history behind this. Try to understand how the fuck they're thinking, instead of going by one goddamn quote. Yes, Margaret Sanger made a quote that's been taken completely fucking out of context. And if you read any of the goddamn sites, you don't see any feminist sites point this out. You don't see too many goddamn conscious African sites point this out. And when I say conscious, I'm talking about look at the sites in question. Right? Farrakhan can do no wrong. He's hooking up with Scientology. And people are getting angry with me about that. Oh, you coming down to brother Scientology's this, Scientology's that. I said Scientology, it was founded by a goddamn neo-Nazi. I mean, you can go all over YouTube and find the audio clips
of this cat saying Hubbard saying the worst things about African people. Ron L. Hubbard did not like African people in the slightest. Scientology is noted for its racism. But here's the here's the Nation of Islam, right, under Farrakhan, moving into Scientology. Scientology is recognized as a cult every goddamn where. They threaten people. They've been found out to have framed people. But, for some reason, Farrakhan trusts him. So the majority of people who believe in Farrakhan, right, who believe in him unquestioningly, they now will go along with this and they follow Scientology. And while you're ranting about homosexuals, and while you're ranting about trans people, and while you're ranting about, interracial marriages and shit, and while you're ranting about this and ranting about that, bullshit that really doesn't have anything to do with any motherfucking thing, in the goddamn meantime, right, we got a lot of confusion out here on the streets, because we got a lot of fucking guys who figure that they're not homosexual, so they don't need to use a condom. With that prostitute that he just shared with three or four other goddamn guys at a party. None of them protected themselves. They paid the girl extra so that she would allow them to do this. You tell me, brother and sister, what the fuck you think is going to happen. And then look at the stats for African people in HIV in Louisiana, in Washington, D.C., in Atlanta, in New York, in Philly, in New Haven, Connecticut, in Dallas, Texas, in Gary, Indiana. Gary, Indiana has been bad for years. In LA, in Seattle, in San Francisco, right? In the Bay Area, right? Because we believe the nonsense. We're not concentrating on what the fuck is happening. We're not concentrating on what is happening. I'm okay at looking at conspiracies. Why? Because conspiracies fucking exist. And anybody who wants to jump, to conclusions and say that I'm not fucking there in terms of that is ridiculous, right? This is the reason why I was vexed with this individual, because they're going to turn around and say, well, I went from the treat on, I don't give a damn what you did before. It's like, what the fuck? And this is how I know this was somebody that's young. Because the world before them didn't exist. They don't need to do any in-depth research. All they need to know is what the fuck they know, what is exciting to them, what pulls their ear, what pulls their attention. This is why they think Kanye West is some kind of a fucking leader. That he's some kind of a race leader, right? This is why feminism now is a blonde Beyonce who bleaches her skin. This is where we are now, where people will hear about the beef between Jay-Z and Harry Belafonte, but don't have a clue as to who Harry Belafonte is and what the fuck he did and what he contributed to this movement. We're looking at The Butler now, the movie The Butler, as how we got free. Right? Here we got Herman Wallace sitting in the box. 40 years. They let his partner go the day before he died, so that way they didn't look bad. Right, we got Lynn Stewart, who fought for black people. A white woman who fought for black people. How many black people have fought for her? She's married to a black man, and he's going from one end of this country to the other. And where is the support from the fucking black community? Where is the RBG people talking about this? She is somebody that has defended black people when they didn't have any money to pay her as a lawyer. She defended all of the supposed radicals that got you what the fuck you got today. And how many of you are supporting? How many of you even know who the fuck she is? Mamie Abu-Jamal is still sitting in there. How many of you RGB cats talk about him? Asada Shakur has been put on this list. Yeah, you're mentioning her right now, but before that, how many of you were talking about her? And how many of you are criticizing Jay-Z and Beyonce for pretty much setting her up? Look at what brother Daruba Bin Wahad has to say about this. He's in a position to know he was framed on the COINTELPRO. He's broken this down. Like coffee and donuts. And it's like, nobody seems to get this. This is what you need to be paying attention to, not who's sleeping with who. Because again, you're looking at the surface. I criticize a lot of these cats too, man, and I've been called homophobic because of it, which is bullshit. These black cats who are gay, who somehow had this idea of being really, really prissy and acting like these white cats that, you know, are out here with the bow ties and these Poindexter suits and what have you. Look, they're confusing to us, and frankly, they're confused. And I'm not saying that with any disrespect. It's just that the black gay people I grew up around were not like that. But they were not also walking around with a super black attitude and hating on everybody who didn't agree with them either. They ask questions, and this is where the movement has gone, to the point where we're not asking questions anymore. And that's what bothered me about this particular individual. Didn't want to ask any questions. Read this one quote from Margaret Sanger and kept goddamn going. Didn't want to, and then says, well, I've read all of her, I read enough of her. No, read that one quote. And took it completely out of context. And the only supporting literature that you will find from this comes from who? The GOP. Comes from the Tea Party. Right? Because from all of the nooks and crannies of the Republican Party and the evangelical right, who want to stop all abortion, period. Not because they give a fuck about black people. Because when it comes to real black issues, like say mass incarceration, like say every 28 hours, you know, someone's being, you know, executed by someone like George Zimmerman, who is an artist now. Have you heard that? He's painting. He's like George W. Bush II. He's painting. Now, did all this human damage around the planet, and now he's painting. He's an artist now. He wants to express himself and be calm. After Trayvon Martin, he wants to be calm. After threatening his girlfriend with a firearm, he wants to be calm. And he's going to, you know, he got his stuff back too. Is the black community saying anything about that? No. Kendrick Johnson, is the black community saying anything about that? They went in there, the feds, to get the goddamn hard drive so they can find out what the hell happened to that boy. Hey. They want to find out what happened to that young man. Is the black community saying anything about it? No. Oscar Grant, you forgot about him, right? Sean Bell, you forgot about him, right? Ayanna Jones, Derrick Jones. You going to riff with me about Margaret goddamn Sanger? And don't want to accept? And just like I forwarded him a link on how Herman Cain has been, you know, he tried to push that. And he was completely goddamn discredited about this. Chapter and verse. I sent this person a link. They just completely fucking ignore it. Because they don't want to admit that they're wrong. And let's be honest in the black community. Because Farrakhan will say this to you and you'll accept it. You don't want to hear criticism. You don't want to hear that you're wrong. Especially after you got loud and put yourself out there. You don't want to admit that you really don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And then you admit that you're goddamn limited in your perspective. And that you refuse to accept any fucking information that doesn't agree with that. Right? Because that, you know, for example, you know, this person accused me of sending them a link from, you know, an actual university page that is part of the Margaret Sanger project. Of course I sent you a fucking link directly from them. Because they made it clear. Yes, this is what she said. But they also pointed out what the fuck the rest of the context was. Which is something that those little quotes do not do. See, this is like saying that if you read one paragraph in a novel, that you understand the entire, you know, scope of the book. How is that logical? It's not fucking logical. It's illogical. And it's, you know what? It's intellectually fucking lazy. And I hate to say this, you know, but a lot of conservative black folks, man, are intellectually fucking lazy. You don't do the goddamn research. You just want to stomp around because you're angry. I understand that. But see, you take your bullshit out on the wrong fucking people. Now, there's, you know, things you could goddamn be doing instead of putting on, you know, camouflage and shit and boots and, you know, a huge motherfucking leather Africa and shit around your chest and going around intimidating white people all fucking afternoon. Then come home and you got, don't have a pot to fucking piss in, but you're black, right? But at the same time, you don't want to hear criticism of Jay-Z, who ain't doing a fucking thing for you, and has his shit in Barney's. A fucking company that, if you do any amount of goddamn research, has been bigoted against black people for fucking decades. And Kanye West has his shit. His Confederate fucking flags. Now, this isn't like a swastika, which you can actually do the fucking research and look at what swastika actually goddamn means. And look at where Adolf Hitler got the idea from, because it wasn't his motherfucking idea. He copped it. He copped it. His whole racial goddamn theory, he copped and then reconfigured what he copped. So that he and Himmler could basically, and Rudolf Hess could put together this, you know, white supremacist magic thing. They were building on what had come before them. You know those names I mentioned earlier, Guido von List, right? Helena Blavatsky, right? There are others. There are others. But, you know, look there. You know, Ernst Jule, right? Look there, right? Look at that. Really look at the occult and the Third Reich and understand why they took the symbols that they took. They weren't theirs. They were copying ideas from other places. I mean, even the concentration camp was an idea that they got from the United States in terms of Native American reservations. But see, if you're viewing and looking at black people, you'll never make that connection, will you? See, you got to get out of this idea that it's all about you. It's never all about one goddamn individual. And, you know, and I say this to, you know, the broad left, and I say this especially to my African and Native brothers and sisters, man. You got to get this idea, out of this idea that the world begins when you came around. What you want to see. That's not being fucking realistic. That's not being realistic at all. And then you need to check your information. And like I said, when it comes to this whole Margaret Sanger, you know, fallacy. Yes, she was a bigot. But what the fuck? You know, we're using the internet. What the fuck is that? Who created that shit? While wearing what? We're speaking what language? Put things in fucking context. I mean, like I said to this person, are you really saying that black women shouldn't have access to healthcare? Shouldn't have access to abortion services? And see, you know, and accusing me of all kinds of bullshit, you know, basically accusing me of what the fuck he was doing. Or she, for that fucking matter, because I don't know. You know, when you're on the internet, you never really know who the fuck you're dealing with, do you? And all praises be to PeaceHand82 on Twitter for, you know, trying to mediate that. You know, I see what the, you know, this individual is trying to do, and I appreciate that. You know, peace that. But yeah, man, you know, black folks, you got to do your goddamn research, man. You can't just put it up that you got some fucking idea and you believe hard enough it'll work. You're going to end up with nothing. Just like these stupid-ass goddamn, you know, white supremacists. You know, the ones who are really crazy and are talking about wiping out all non-white people altogether. Well, all they're going to do is inbreed and disappear from all kinds of genetic, you know, problems. So, you know, let them go ahead and do that. Because that's what AIDS is all about. That's what AIDS is all about. See, that's a real motherfucking conspiracy. And instead of, you know, not trying to protect yourself and just, you know, saying some bullshit that, oh, this is the gay disease and it's not going to affect me. Well, yeah, you know, you're a motherfucking idiot. And, you know, you are really putting yourself and a whole lot of other people at fucking danger, especially if you're one of these cats that can't keep his goddamn, you know, libido in motherfucking control. You know, if you can't control your own goddamn domain. And you can't use enough common sense that if you wouldn't put on a pair of shoes about socks, then you can fucking put that condom on, man. And or, better yet, you can put that condom on. But before that, you can have a conversation with that young lady. You know, you can have a conversation with that person that you're dealing with as to what's going on with you and find out what's going on with them. And then you can make some conscious decisions. But if you're not going to motherfucking, you know, do that, if you don't want to get deeper into your partner, if you don't want to ask any fucking questions, and like I said, you want to be intellectually lazy with everything in your motherfucking life, then, you know, go right ahead and continue to fucking keep taking chances, you know. But see, you're just contributing to the motherfucking problem. You're just contributing to the problem. You know, putting this shit on gay men is really a whole lot of bullshit, especially when you got a whole lot of brothers and aren't being honest about what the fuck is really going on with them. And nobody wants to talk about what's going on in the prison system. Nobody wants to talk out loud any goddamn way, even though we all know what the fuck is going on. You got a lot of black women out here who are just coping because they know what the fuck is going on. And they deal with it by not saying any fucking thing and they're putting themselves at risk. But see, we're not going to talk about that. You know, we're not going to talk about the fact that it's pretty clear that this shit was man-made. See, we're not going to talk about that and actually do the research to root it to find out where the hell it's from. No, we just go by belief. Belief is just that. It's belief. It's not fact. The first president of the United States was not John Hanson. That's a fact. There are people who have canceled their subscriptions right before this podcast because I've said that. It's the truth. It's the truth, and I've heard all kinds of crazy-ass explanations of why I'm wrong. I'm not wrong. There was no goddamn photography back then, and that photograph of the John Hanson, you're confusing, it was a Liberian politician. He had nothing to do with what you're thinking about. I said this, what, a couple of podcasts ago about the $2 bill. People think that that's a, you know, John Hanson in the back, or... No, 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 no. Or Prince Hall, right? No. No, 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 no. We have to be objective. We have to look at the information. It's not white to look at the information. It's not supportive of Planned Parenthood to note the fact that Planned Parenthood is not part of a program of African genocide. I don't support Planned Parenthood either way. I stated a fact. They have provided services to African and Native women when no one else would, period. And if they wanted abortions, they could get them. But if you can find evidence, anybody can find evidence that they somehow were part of a plan other than providing these services, then that's crazy, because then basically you need to blame every, you know, surgical unit anywhere and everybody with a goddamn hanger, basically, who was doing that kind of backdoor work that's ever done abortion, and say that it was just to get rid of black people. That's crazy. That's crazy. It's not true. You see, one of the things that, you know, a lot of these people who are really short-sighted don't seem to understand is that the argument against abortion by conservatives is for a reason. It's because white people are the ones, or white women, I suppose, are the ones to get the majority of abortions in the United States. For a variety of reasons. For a variety of reasons. They're trying to stop abortion, period. And everything that they have been doing, mostly making a theological argument, because they don't want to come out and make the racial argument that they're really concerned about their numbers dwindling. Because again, this person only wants to look at black people. Again, not looking at the larger context. Europeans in Europe have zero population growth. And the last time the census was taken, Europeans were on the bottom. So, you know, they are trying to stop abortion for a reason. They've been talking about this for the past 30 years. Now, like I said, this person who I was quarreling with doesn't do any goddamn research. But they've been talking about this, what, Lupe, since the 70s, right? When you and I were young. When they were talking about how by 2025 or 26, the population of the United States that was European, that could really be identified as European, would be about 6%, right? 6-4%, some number like that. And I remember another number being put out about 12, but it was somewhere within that range. Well, anyway, you know, there was a priest that I had quoted from the New York Times some years back, many years back actually, who said if we don't stop, you know, abortion, there won't be any white people left in America. Now, this was an off-the-cuff remark, but it's pretty serious, and it was pretty illuminative, as far as I'm concerned. That the real, you know, beef against abortion in this country is to try to stop the eradication of the white population in terms of numbers. You know, because, you know, white women, for the most part, at least lately, you know, they're marrying black men, they're marrying Spanish-speaking Indians, you know, a lot of marrying natives, and they're not having kids with white men, you know. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of go back and forth, but, you know, it's really what's happening. These white women are not giving birth to what they consider to be pure white children. And they're not identifying on the census and wherever else they have to ask their race, like we're living in some kind of goddamn Nazi state. I mean, it's a fascist state in terms of you can't tell the difference between capitalism and government any fucking more. I mean, it's just a revolving fucking door. You know, same thing with the military. You know, they come out of the military, go right into private, you know, practice. Which, you know, I don't have a particular problem with. It's just that they go working for, you know, Turner Brown and Root and what have you, or the Carlisle group. So, you know, we have to understand what the argument about abortion or against abortion is in the first place. Now, while it has these theological roots, you have to also look at the hypocrisy. Now, Ronald Reagan was all for abortion at one time. You know, don't try to tell this to any GOP voting Ronald Reagan lover today, but Ronald Reagan was pro-abortion. His daughter had an abortion. This was publicized. Nobody cared. Nobody said anything. Because the idea was poor people get abortions, right? But when he signed out that, you know, people of the upper class, the white upper class, were getting, you know, more abortions than they realized. And then it started spreading to the white middle class in terms of the late 60s, 70s, in terms of choice. Well, hey, they realized then that they had, as they put it, a population problem. Then when you add intermarriage into it, it's an issue. So when you see all of the literature that is leading to this nonsense, you know, it turns out that these are people who are trying to stop abortion, period. So if they can't do it one way, they'll do it another. You know, this is the same thing that goes on when they say that, you know, MLK was a Republican, without noting all of the things that he said about Republicans in terms of their hypocrisy. You know, it's coldly one-sided. And there's a lot of black folks who get online who should know better. But again, intellectually lazy, don't do their research, don't want to, see past what it is that's right there, because you might actually have to do some more mental work, right? And that's really a problem. It really, really is. You know, I mean, the pyramids are ours. We don't have to argue about that. We can do the math and prove that. You know, say we have a glorious goddamn history, but we don't even know it. See, we nitpick on bullshit. And this is what I'm talking about. While this brother and I were nitpicking, and this is somebody I had invited on the show at least, what, 2-3 times, right, Lupe? And even today, I said, look, you can come on the show and we can discuss it, you know. And, you know, did not take that opportunity. It just continued to be belligerent. So, look, let it be known, man. I don't put up with bullshit. If you have a point, present your point. But, you know, insults and, you know, being fucking nasty and accusing me or insinuating that I support white power or white supremacy and shit, you can kiss my motherfucking ass, because that's bullshit. And then when I say, hey, well, here's the evidence, and I put links up and I present it, and you refuse to look at that, well, see, the problem is yours. And the ignorance is clear. This is the Angry Indian, and you are listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Radio. He is not only for Indians, but he is also for blacks and other minorities. And they have done a lot on the problems in Palestine and also the problems of blacks. And so I recommend that you listen to him.
What was your impression of that Wade's drive to the basket there on the guy and got the free throws?
And just a jerk. That's the best way to say it. He's just a jerk.
The back right.
Eddie Sefko, Dallas News. Avery, what was your impression of that Wade's drive to the basket there on the guy and got the free throws?
You tell me. What was your impression?
Unfortunately, nobody cares about my impression.
No, but you tell everybody here. You tell us. What was your impression?
My impression was he got 2 free throws out of it.
No, that's all right. That's a political answer. So, let me ask you the question again. What was your impression on that play? We're waiting.
Did he get fouled?
I'm asking you the question. What was your impression?
I'm done. I don't know what to say. What do you want me to say?
No, I want you to give everybody an honest answer. We got people from Israel and Minnesota, Chicago, all over Dallas, you know, Germany.
I'll follow up with another question if that's all right.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
All right,
Don't stutter.
The free throw, the timeout issue at the end there again. I'm still confused. Was it supposed to be called after the second timeout, or that's the first one? Or
and pretty much most people who've ever been involved in the NBA for 20, 30 years No, we wouldn't want one anyway with only one timeout left.
This is Radio Anguindian. Anguindian Radio for the Fourth World.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Radio Insurgente, la voz de los sin voz.
Vamos, 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 vamos adelante, para que salgamos en la lucha avante, porque nuestra patria grita y necesita de todo el esfuerzo de los zapatistas.
Transmitiendo desde algún lugar de las montañas del sureste mexicano. En la frecuencia 97.9 en FM.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Palestine is one of the most reported places in the world.
But there's still a lot of misinformation about the reality on the ground.
What much of the media fails to explain
is that since 1948, nearly 75% of the entire indigenous Palestinian population
have been forcibly driven off our land
to make room for the creation of the so-called State of Israel.
And we are denied the right to return to our homeland.
The remaining 25% of Palestinians live as second-class citizens in the State of Israel, all under a brutal military occupation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip.
While world powers fund and support Israel,
we,
the people of the world, in our millions,
support the Palestinian people's struggle for freedom and equal rights.
If I boycott Israeli goods,
it's because I oppose an illegal occupation.
Because I oppose racism. Because I oppose brutality towards the indigenous people of a land. I reject the notion that I am anti-Semitic.
I reject the notion I'm a self-hating Jew. Simply because I oppose the idea of an exclusively Jewish state.
There is only one line of division.
It's not a line of division between Muslims and Jews.
It's not a line of division between Palestinians and Israelis.
It is a line of division.
It is a line of division.
It is a line of division between those who stand for the equality of all
and those who stand for the supremacy of some. Boycott apartheid.
Boycott Israel.
Boycott apartheid.
Boycott Israel.
Boycott apartheid. boycott Israel.
Hello, this is Susan Aglukak. The first week of December is Aboriginal AIDS Awareness Week. Learn the ways you can protect yourself and others from infection and spreading HIV. Together can make a difference.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
She loses the nomination.
I'm going to the other guy.
We would vote for McCain.
Yes. I don't feel like putting a black man in there. Not, I ain't prejudiced or nothing, but I just don't have a... I don't think he should be in there.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is APNS Public Radio.
As promised, Charles Fair from the NBA Journal is on the phone line. Had the front page of NBA Journal, a black man, Amore John Hanson, was the first black president of the United States, according to the NBA Journal. Charles, how you doing today, brother? How you doing?
Very good, Bo. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. Glad to have you on radio. Now, tell us about this, the front page of John Hanson.
John Hanson was the first president of the United States and a black person and a well-educated black man and very wealthy and also a Moor. And he was the president of the United States from 1781 to 1782. We won our independence in 1776. So therefore, he formed the first government in 1781 on a one-year term. And he also created the Thanksgiving holiday. He gave 800 pounds of silver to the army because the army funds were very low because of the Revolutionary War. So he plays a big part in developing the United States of America.
Now, what? Tell me, where did he document it? How can we find this, like, information on this?
Where can you find the information?
It's like the documents to say all this about John Hanson. Because, I didn't hear nothing about this until Obama ran for president. All of a sudden, we start hearing that he was not the first black president.
Well, you get documents from the books, from Jefferson Wilson, Congress Dynamics. You could take that book and look at that one.
What's the name of it again?
Jefferson White, Congressional Dynamics. And you'll find a lot of information in that book there.
Jefferson.
Yeah.
White, Dynamics. Now, some people like John Hope Franklin, who's probably one of the most thoroughly researched historian, and all his books that he's written, why do you think he probably never mentioned anything like that?
I really don't have any idea why he didn't mention it about John Hanson. Barack Obama has graduated from top of his class and from Harvard University, and he really specialized in constitutional law.
Now, who's that?
Barack Obama.
Oh, he mentioned it. President Obama mentioned it.
He never mentioned it. So,
okay.
For what reason, I don't know. But that'd be a good question to ask.
I mean, yeah, because I'm still trying to find those definitive proof. Because one thing is the picture. The picture is from 1781.
1781, right?
And
I don't know whether or not that picture was taken and 1781, but he was the president from 1781 to 1782, and there were six other presidents that served 1 year on the Articles of the Confederation, and George Washington was the eighth president of the United States in the Constitution.
So even though black people were three-fifths of a man in 1781, three-fifths of a man, 1781, this guy was allowed to be over the Continental Congress.
Well, I think they look at his leadership. He has great leadership and flesh of the world in person. And we sometimes, many people in this country think all black people during that time came here as slaves. We have very little understanding of African history. We have a great university called Timbuktu that produced many well-educated Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And all Africans were not poor, very well educated. When they brought the Africans to this country for agriculture and to build buildings and railroads, they were not ignorant. They were very, very, very intelligent people. But most people came under the ideology of capitalism, which is a system that has only allegiance to capital. And that's the main purpose, and we buy into that. And every African didn't buy into that type of ideology. There were people like Nick Turner, Daisy Virtue. They all fought and rebelled, but all that was not down in history.
But you find documentation of Annette Turner. That's documented. You find the resurrections. I think that's well documented.
You'll find that, but it's not very. They're not very popular. I mean, it's not like, for instance, Harry Tubman was more popular than Nick Turner and Dan Marvarsi. But those people were, you know, real revolutionary and reactionary.
So people like Carter G. Woodson, and I read his books. He's the godfather of black history.
Mm-hmm.
He never mentioned this guy.
Well, I don't know for sure whether or not he mentioned him or not, but maybe not. But this is very factual information.
Well, I would like can you get us the documents on that? Because I got a professor coming up who's probably going to say something different. It's probably going to say something different. I want to get the documents. I would love history is something that we pride ourselves on knowing. We want to know history. And we don't want to make Irvin miss history because we got too much good history to put out there. We got stuff that we haven't even extracted yet that is good history from where we come from. And so I've been trying my hardest just to get some documents about this John Hanson. I cannot find it. I've been to the Harvard archives. I've read plenty of historian books. Even did the census check. And, you know, I find a white man named John Hanson in 1781. And you know what I find about the name of John Hanson? It's somebody from Liberia who was a senator. And when you go to the country of Liberia, the same picture that's been used in America as a Moor is the same image of a senator in the country of Liberia in the late 1800s.
And, you know, what also is funny about that is that picture looks like a photograph,
right?
Not a drawing.
That's another thing that y'all don't want to get.
And the actual first photograph ever really taken that is documented, according to Wikipedia, is in 1817.
You can look at George Washington picture.
Right.
George Washington picture is not a photograph.
It's a drawing.
It's a drawing.
Right, an image of him drawn.
So do we know how this picture came about, Mr. Fair?
No, I never investigated that, how the picture came about. But it looks real to me.
I mean, it's a real picture, it is. I mean, that we do know. It is a real picture.
Yeah.
Liberia, the country of Liberia says this is their senator from the late 1800s. Unless this guy lived to be 150 years old, Liberia is saying this is a picture that's been used as a black man. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe I would love to see these documents.
Say it again. They said Liberia said that was their picture from Liberia.
Yes,
they say that that's their picture from a senator that was taken from the United States to Liberia when they were shipping blacks out of
America. United,
out of America, back to Africa, or back to, I guess, a country that they chose to go to, or whatever, and stuff, or wherever the ships were going. And this guy, this is a Polaroid picture of this guy. When you look at the history of cameras and Polaroids and things of that nature and stuff, the Polaroid camera, and they only made one successful Polaroid in 1817. 1826, they France, he made his first permanent camera photograph in 1826 by coating a pewter plate with bitum and exposing the plate in this camera. So you're talking almost 100-150 years later, because this is an actual picture. This ain't a drawing. There's no photographs of George Washington. There's no photographs of
John Adams.
There's no photographs of a whole lot of people back in those days, especially the 1700s. I think the first photograph ever seen of a president, and I think it was Abraham Lincoln. I'm not sure. But
anyway, can you please get us the document? I would love to see those documents.
Oh, yeah. I won't have a problem giving you the document.
Because this will show us that maybe George Washington was not getting the Class A service. And when he was president, that John Hanson was getting better service than he were in a country that still had black people enslaved.
Yeah. Well, see, what I don't know how old John Hanson was when this picture was taken. But as you can see, that he was a well-dressed man.
Yeah.
He'd be an intelligent person and also a very wealthy person.
Okay.
Pardon me?
No, I don't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Please. That's something. I think about Richard Allen, started the AME Church. He never mentioned it. Prince Hall, very active in those times. All these people doing that same time.
Yes.
Prince Hall.
Absalom Jones.
They never mentioned this.
You know, people of that nature and stuff. And Prince Hall was a guy who started school back in those times. Hospital for blacks. Also Absalom Jones, AME Church. And these people, and I've done extensive research on all of those guys just because I am a Prince Hall Mason. I wanted to know who we were named after and stuff, and in all the books I've ever read, you know, whether they, for the right or for the left of it, never mentioned this guy.
Leroy Bennett didn't mention it before the Mayflower, the history of black America. But so I'm trying to, do you know a book where this is written in, Mr. Chow?
Yes, I do. I have some books, some reference books that you can look up and check it out. His grandson promoted John Hanson as the first president of the United States with a statue in Cesare Hall in the United States Capitol. So you can check that out, too.
What's the name of the book?
I'm saying that. Well, I could give you a few books that you can have reference to.
Okay.
All right. One of them is Jefferson and Wilson, Congressional Dynamics. They have a lot of different articles on him in that book.
Okay. Anything else you want to share with so our listeners can do their research? Because people have been talking about this, and I'm like, well, you know, that's maybe I can learn something today. It was something that I didn't know about.
John Alexander. He wrote about him. Richard Morris. And the Forgiving of the Union. There's a lot of different books that was written, you know, that had some parts, some pieces of his time when he was a president of the United States.
Now, there...
He also mentioned the six other presidents that followed John Hanson. And so George Washington was the eighth president on the Constitution. You know, we had our Grand Commission in 1787, but nevertheless, by the United States being independent in 1776, 5 years later, after the first government was formed, John Hanson became the first president of the United States of America. for 1 year.
All right.
And under the Articles of Confederation, they were only allowed to serve 1 year. And within no 1 year term, they had to wait 3 more years later in order to run again.
So what does this say about the slavery that was going on? What does it say?
You know, it didn't mention anything about slavery too much because really the United States was so busy fighting the British, you know, in a Revolutionary War.
So a black man was more interested in fighting the British than freeing the slaves in the South.
There wasn't really a lot of slavery going on back then. See, when they had slaves, for the growth of America, they had slaves after, a long time after, to enhance wealth because this was a young nation. On the capitalist ideology, they killed a lot of Indians and took their land and justified it by saying they were savages. But they had millions and millions of acres of land that they took from the Indians. Hmm. But the Indians couldn't work the land. They died out because of diseases from the Europeans. So they brought in the Africans, which all Africans were not slaves. They also brought in whites, too, from Europe. They were indentured servants. So they served 7 years. They were free.
I got Professor Manpin on the phone line. Professor, 1 second, okay? You're live on radio, so I can't mute your line. But I want this the newspaper guy to finish up that he's getting ready to say before I come to you. I'm just letting you know whatever you say is going to be live on radio. Mr. Fair, can you finish off the last segment there?
Pardon me?
Can you finish off the last part you were saying?
Oh, yeah. I was saying that all Africans who came to America were not slaves. And the Europeans were slaves. They were indentured servants. There were some well-to-do people from Africa. And one of the famous colleges in Africa was Timbuktu.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the idea that all Africans were slaves.
Oh, no. I think people know that. There were people who were free during that time.
Why they were so shocked. And for what country he came from, I don't know, because his last name Hanson. And that don't seem like an African name, so I have not done any research on his last name.
Can you tune in? Because I got Professor Ampan who's going to talk on this subject, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, and if you can, email me those books that you mentioned. I would like to get those.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you for this least thought-provoking topic. You started off, Mr. Fair.
Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. All right.
All right.
Right. Okay. On the phone line, we got Professor Manuel Ampan, who is probably the fact finder and historian out of California. How are you doing today, Professor? You there?
I'm doing great, Brother Paul. Yeah, everything is going well, brother.
Good. I thanks for being available. And
no problem.
On independent
before them or 18 or 24, and you have just one that's of a different ethnic background, that doesn't make you that at all, because people judge you on your physical appearance, your physiognomy, your phenotype, and they don't. So you can claim to be what you want, but your genes choose before you do. So the reality is Barack Obama is clearly the first president that is biracial in terms of having a African parent, and the other ones did not. You have to go back many, many generations, and this is why it makes no sense to promote all of these myths, because America has been a racist country from the very beginning. Slavery was a hallmark of American life going back to the first permanent English settlement in Jamestown, and it is clear that the Constitution justifies and promotes and condones slavery in its conception. And so black people had no rights in early America. In fact, every one of the colonies was slave-owning colonies. And even when the northern colonies that became states began to gradually eliminate slavery, even when that did happen, black people in the northern states had no rights. You're talking about strict racial segregation and black people having no rights in the north. So to assume or to suggest that a black person would be in the council making decisions about the direction of the new country is preposterous. Now, the other thing that's associated with this outrageous myth, as people float these crazy emails around, is the another painting. This is a painting, or in some cases, it's a photograph of the back of the $2 bill.
I just talked to him about this, but yeah, I know where you're going. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Take your time, Professor. Talk about this $2 bill that
in
it has
the back of the $2 bill.
Okay. So,
are we recording this?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in this foolishness that's promoted, is that what people do? They send out an email and they want to shock people. Oh, Barack Obama is not the first black president. Okay, so then they send out a photograph of the back of the $2 bill. Now, on the back of it, the one that's more common than not, there's a lime green circle around an individual that these people claim is John Hansen. And then then they say that, look, here's the circle of the first black president of the United States, the first president, period, and he is sitting in his position as the president. Well, wait a minute. If anybody looks at what these people circle, the person, this is somebody who's in the back of the proceedings, number one. He's way in the back. He's not even front and center. Mm-hmm. So how can the man be sitting in his position as president when he's not even an important figure in the drawing, number one? Secondly, on the back of the $2 bill, what's happening is this. People think that it's the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It's not the signing. Is actually a draft that's being given by a five-man committee. And these five men, what they did was, and this included Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, George Washington, there's five individuals, the five-man committee. They were given the task by the 56 men in the Continental Congress who came together and said, look, we need to draft a declaration, a statement that we're now fighting this war to become an independent country. So why don't we form a subcommittee so you five go and draft this statement. So what's happened on the back of the $2 bill is a draft that's being given by the five-man committee. And this is a painting done by John Trumbull. John Trumbull was commissioned by the United States once it became an independent country. Is commissioned in 1817, so the country's already independent now, and they commissioned John Trumbull to draw what this proceeding may have looked like. Now, out of the 56 men, John Trumbull only drew about 42 in his painting, and nevertheless, what he draws was the five-man committee presenting a draft to the president of the Continental Congress, and that happened to be John Hancock, not Hanson. This is a different John Hancock. So when people say, hey, look, you gave me back this document, but you forgot your Hancock, they mean, look, you forgot your signature.
Oh.
So John Hancock is the man, if anybody can take a look at it, they can see on the back of the $2 bill, a man is sitting front and center in this drawing, and he is receiving the documents from the five-man committee. That's John Hancock, who is presiding over the proceedings, and this is in 1776. John Hancock is in charge. So the myth makers say that John Hansen is the man who's president, but he the person that they drew is way off to the side. But here's more of the nonsense in all of it, is that John Hansen, this myth is about John Hansen. John Hansen is not even a part of the 56 men who drafted the Declaration of Independence. He wasn't even present, nor did he sign anything. In fact, this drawing by John Trumbull shows not John Hansen, but he actually shows Thomas Hayward Jr. So that's the person that the mythmakers are circling and misrepresenting that as John Hansen. It's not John Hansen. This is Thomas Hayward Jr., the representative from South Carolina, who in the drawing is talking to his colleague from South Carolina, Arthur Middleton. So here's when it gets interesting, and people have to look at the image to see how dumb it really is. Thomas Hayward Jr. looks a little bit darker than all of the other elite white men who are gathering, making decisions. And the reason why Thomas Hayward Jr. looks darker than the other individuals, not because he was black, he looks darker because his colleague, Arthur Middleton, in the painting, is leaning over, talking to him, and he's leaning over and blocking the light from above, creating a shadow on much of the face of Thomas Hayward Jr. And if anybody looks at the original painting of this this draft of the Declaration of Independence, cause it's a huge painting that's in the Rotunda building in the U.S. Capitol. It's right on the ceiling. If anybody looks at that huge painting, you can see the details and see that the man seated is a white guy like all the rest of them. You can see the top of his forehead is totally white, and the reason why the rest of his face, from his kind of his eyes down to his mouth, looks darker is because it's a shadow. The internet people, they don't know better. All they're looking at is a dark a $2 bill with the dark green. You can't really tell any details. So rather than looking at the original rich colored painting to see that everybody in this drawing are white, they think that one person seems to be a little bit darker. Oh, okay, we got it. That must be the first black president, which makes no sense whatsoever because Thomas Hayward Jr. was white and the man is way in the back. So he's not sitting in any position of authority. He's like the other dozens of people there giving their input about how this statement should be given to the King of England.
Wow.
So it's just one silly myth after another associated with John Hanson, and John Hanson had nothing to do with the Declaration of Independence. He's not on the back of the $2 bill. There are no black people in the proceedings. Black people had no rights. Article 1, Section 2, as you were indicating, Brother Paul, indicates that black people were simply represented as 3/5 of all other human beings, and if we look at the Constitution, they basically had no rights whatsoever, and there's no possible way that any black person had any rights that white people respected in the 1780s, 1790s, anywhere in that time period. So
they didn't even have a right to vote in 1780, did we?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Exactly. They had no right to vote.
I got some notes here. In March the 12th in 1780, a group of blacks in Massachusetts petitioned on the grounds of tax without representation. In 1780. So if this man was a so-called president, then his black people couldn't even vote.
Right. And another thing I wanted to ask you, Doctor, was we had this thing. I'm a Prince Hall Mason. And I don't know if you ever heard the myth of that's Prince Hall on the back of a $2 bill. You actually have brothers that carry this $2 bill in their pocket.
For real?
And on their wallet and will not spend it. They could be hungry, cold, wet, whatever, and they will not spend this $2 bill.
Have you heard that one, Professor?
That's a new one to me.
Yeah. And I was like, when you said there was no black people in this painting.
Right, right.
You know, our grand historian had brought this out, too, during a meeting and stuff, like, look, this is not Prince Hall, our founder. This is a shadow, and the painting is here. He had documents and everything and stuff, so I'm kind of glad you touched on that.
Professor, what's the motive behind these type of, I mean, if you might know,
myths.
What these urban myths, what can we gain? What do we gain about out of these myths?
You know, it's like they're just given to this Ripley's, believe it or not, information that's shocking. So people, I guess they feel that they're doing something to share information that's stunning. Something that Serena Williams said, or Camille Cosby, or black people are going to lose the right to vote. I remember that came out in 2007,
right,
that if we don't vote, they're going to take it from us. And the people promoting it never occurred to them that they went to the Department of Justice's official website to deal with the Voting Rights Act of 1965, they would know that that would make no sense whatsoever. But what people tend to gain from, I don't know. Obviously, people are struggling, so maybe this has something to do with their low self-esteem, but it clearly has to do with their lack of research methods, that the people have done no study. They haven't been trained on how to do research. So whatever, you know, it's like little children. Whenever someone gives them something, they believe it to be true because they don't have the tools to dissect or assess the value and credibility of information that they receive. And it's really sad that just basic thinking is abandoned when people are promoting these things. You know, I tell you this, though, if there was no internet around, there's no way these myths could have gotten very far, because intelligent, mature people have other things to do with their time. If they would have had to go to the copier, spend money, and make copies and send things out in the mail and make flyers, and they would get it.
That's too much work.
I just couldn't hold back. Right. I just couldn't hold back.
So the internet, it got its pluses, it got its minuses then.
Exactly. So the pluses is that we can communicate as we are today with people locally and around the world. But the minus, so it's like a knife. I mean, if you, you know, have some maturity and training, it can be very useful if you're cooking and doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
But also it can be deadly and dangerous, and that's how the internet is. And so, unfortunately, it becomes a dangerous tool to the uninitiated people who are so gullible. Whatever you tell them, they believe it. It's just like, you know, it's the height of immaturity. And we in quotations, engage in this kind of nonsense seemingly more than any other group. So obviously we have some serious issues.
Wow. Now, I wanted to ask you, too, well, since we're talking about myths and urban myths and stuff, is it true that there are still slave laws on the federal books?
No, because here's what these elite white men did. When they agreed on the Constitution and adopted it in 1787, they agreed that it would go into effect in March of 1789, and that's what happened. So when it goes into effect, there are five articles and sections in the Constitution that justify, promote, and condone slavery. So we mentioned Article 1, Section 2. There's also Article 1, Section 9, which is the importation tax. In other words, what they agreed to do is to say, look, you can bring in, to the general population, you can bring in any, as they say, of such persons as you deem necessary, they mean enslaved Africans, you can import them in, and this cannot be prohibited by Congress for the next 21 years. There can't even be a debate on this issue.
Right.
But if you do bring in people, up to $10 per person must be paid into the national treasury. So they're not looking to end the slave trade. They say you can bring in anybody you want. They condone it. Also, that's Article 1, Section 9. Also, Article 4, Section 2, the Fugitive Slave Clause, meaning that if an African ran away from any state in which he or she was enslaved, even if they went and eventually ran away
to a free state,
into a free state, the citizens of the United States were obligated by the Constitution to aid in the capture and return of any African, as long as the so-called slave owner made a claim that he was the owner. And that was a constitutional obligation. But there's five of them. That's just the three more prominent ones. So what these vicious men decided to do in their compromising is never to mention the word slave or slavery in the Constitution, because they understood that this would be a public, a national, and international document. They just got through fighting an 8-year war against King George III in Britain, talking about his vicious acts against the 13 colonies. So they talked about him being a tyrant, and yet they were doing the same thing. So they didn't want to expose their own hypocrisy, so they decided not to use the word slave or slavery. They used what I call camouflage language, indirect language, so that you really wouldn't know unless you knew what the arguments were. That's why it's important to get the minutes of these debates to see what they decided to compromise and leave out. And the word slavery is not mentioned in the Constitution until, very interestingly, that it's abolished.
Mm.
It's abolished with the 13th Amendment. So with the 13th Amendment passed right after the Civil War, that's what made slavery illegal. So all of those articles and sections in the Constitution that justified slavery, they were now null and void once the 13th Amendment was passed.
Wow.
That outlawed slavery for the first time.
Professor Manyampian, a couple more questions in regard to this. Now, how many books have you read over time? How many have you read, I should say? I want to let people know your qualifications.
Kind of hard to say because, you know, it's books, it's essays, it's articles, it's looking at primary sources. But I can say this, though, that I've been doing firsthand or primary research in the field for since the mid-80s. So that would be about a quarter century.
Okay.
And so I say that documentation beats conversation. And I would just say this as well, is that it's always more important to go to the sources rather than deal with historical hearsay and gossip.
Right. Go to the actual documents. And you had never seen anything that would have said John Hanson was a black man at all.
No. It makes no sense. There are no black people who can even give input in any of these councils. And by the way, most of the men in the Continental Congress, most of them were slave owners who saw no humanity in black people.
Mm.
So they're not going to have somebody in their midst of African descent, let alone being the president of the group. This is preposterous. But these are people who obviously have a low self-esteem and was always looking for a black first to try to equal white positions. Well, this position doesn't mean anything. These are slave owners, most of them.
Wow.
These are arrogant, elite white men who gave no rights to women. They gave no rights to Native Americans. Africans had no rights. And they gave no rights. They extended no rights, no political rights to poor whites. And the reason why is because they believe that poor whites, if they didn't have enough land, then they should not be given the right to vote, because if they were given that right, they would use their vote irresponsibly because they wouldn't have anything to lose. That's
wow.
what their argument was, is that we can't extend rights to these people. So poor whites could not even vote until the 10th U.S. presidential election. So the first 9 elections, even poor white males couldn't even vote and had no voice.
Mm.
So there was no democracy even for poor white men who didn't own enough property, and clearly women had no rights. Women couldn't even vote, to my white women, couldn't even vote in America until 1920.
Mm. Wow.
So we 3/5 of a man, we claim that it's a black president.
Yeah, I mean, it's a violation of common sense. It's a complete disrespect of the tradition of virulent white racism in America, that black people weren't even considered human beings at the time who had any rights that white people were bound to respect. As a matter of fact, black people couldn't vote. Black people could not be jurors. They could not testify against white people. They certainly couldn't hold any office.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is objective, verifiable information. Anybody could read this and know that these are facts. So you don't just have some black person that emerges all of a sudden. And matter of fact, they didn't have to be politically correct about anything. I mean, who would they be attempting to appease by putting a black person in position like that anyway? So, but it's like, you know, the myths are really dumb. And we really, you know, what we need, Brother Rob and Brother Paul, we need more listeners,
mm-hmm.
more people in the community to join a campaign that I've been a part of now for 20 years. And it's a campaign against the spread of ignorance.
Campaign against the spread of ignorance.
That's what we need.
I like that. I like that.
Well, since we're on that subject, campaign. I wanted to ask you something, you being a historian. Christopher Columbus.
Oh, we know. He'd already talked about that.
I want to know. I just want to
know. We had him on last year. We got on the website. But you can refresh us, though.
Yeah.
You know how you feel about Christopher Columbus, the myth on that. Go ahead. Finish up your question, Rob.
That's it.
Christopher Columbus. What do you and I know we still got it up on our website. From the previous Columbus Day from last year.
But I wanted to refresh your course.
Rob need a refresher course on Good Saint.
How great of a man he really was, and how he discovered this land and this country, and he shook everybody's hands, and
we celebrate him.
We celebrate him on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you this. Here's what I did this past fourth Thursday in November. I went to Alcatraz Island right here in the San Francisco Bay.
Mm.
Because every year you have the Native American group of tribes that come together to have, it's not Thanksgiving, it's Thanks-taking.
Thanks-taking.
So they have an annual Thanks-taking event. And you know what? It was so to leave from the San Francisco Pier out to Alcatraz, you know, the boat ride is, I don't know, maybe about 15 minutes. But the first boat left at 4:45 in the morning because it's a sunrise gathering, and it was cold, it was dark, it was raining, but it was exciting. And you know what? There was at least 10,000-12,000 or more people there.
Wow.
And the Native Americans there are energized to promote their culture in opposition to this outrageous Columbus Day. And the performers were performing without shoes, and the men were performing without shirts. It's cold. It's rain. I mean, it rained the whole time. It's pretty phenomenal to see this. But they understand the reality, and what the listeners should know is that Columbus was celebrated throughout North America, Central America, South America, and the Caribbean by many people in many countries. And I remember that they, in this hemisphere, were gearing up for probably the biggest celebration in the history of the Western Hemisphere in October of 1992. Mm-hmm. This would have been the quincentennial, or the 500-year celebration of Columbus's first landing in the Bahamas. Now, he never stepped foot in North America. He had no idea that this place was even here. The man was confused, disoriented, and lost. He thought he was somewhere near India. He had no idea he was in another part of the world. See, he lands on the Bahama Islands October 12, 1492, so the celebration was going to commemorate that. But that's when this huge multinational celebration was turned upside down. So Native Americans and African scholars led the way. They said, look, you can't celebrate this man. He's an international criminal. He enslaved Native Americans, and he also initiated the transatlantic slave trade.
Hmm.
It was Columbus himself, who's the captain of those initial three ships, who ordered the kidnapping and the capture and the enslavement of Native Americans. He did that. We know that because of his own writings in his own journal and the firsthand accounts of men like Bartolomé de las Casas, because de las Casas was with Columbus and the other conquistadors, the Spanish conquerors, and he detailed his eyewitness accounts of how they slaughtered tons of Native Americans. And de las Casas' work is called Devastation of the Indies. So that book was brought out again. Columbus's own journals were brought out in 1992. As well as the work of scholars like Jack Forbes, a Native American scholar, and so many others. And so it went from a celebration to only a commemoration. People said you can commemorate that the man traveled, but what are you celebrating, death and destruction?
Hmm.
It went from a celebration to a commemoration to ultimately a condemnation. The man is now condemned as an international criminal, and that's why you have different cities, like the city of Berkeley right here in the Oakland area, where I'm at, that now is no such thing as Columbus Day. It's Indigenous Peoples Day.
Okay.
Then you have countries like Venezuela, Indigenous Resistance Day. But the resistance that we have in the country are the fact that you got people who live in places like Columbus, Georgia, or Columbus, Ohio.
Right.
You got city-sponsored celebrations, and they're not willing to give it up. And
right.
So you got major resistance to this myth of how great Columbus was, but clearly the man is condemned in most quarters around the country. So this is another big-time myth, but has been thoroughly attacked in one by one segment of the population after another based on records and evidence, and not just people today criticizing him for things that we only see as bad today, but nobody had problems with then. No, people had problems then as well.
Right, right.
And we're just looking at what is obviously a crime to kill off people just, and, you know, he wanted to enslave them to maximize profits by making Native Americans mine for gold. That was one of his motives. So, you know, there's a lot of myths that we have to continue to tackle.
Oh, Professor Manu Ampan, how can people find out about your research? What's the website they need to go to?
They can go directly to my site. It's, my name is manuampim.com. That's M-A-N-U A-M-P-I-M, manuampim.com. And all of my details are there, as well as my ongoing primary research and the work I do in archives, museums, institutes around the U.S., as well as the systematic field work that I do in Africa every year. Well, you know, we take people to Africa to go to the sites, go to the sources, the pyramids, temples, tombs, the local villages, so that we can know what our culture is and not have to guess or rely on internet myth makers who will tell us anything.
You're also on Facebook, too, I think. I think you're one of my Facebook friends.
Exactly. I'm on Facebook. People can check me out on Facebook. We can do the Facebook friend thing. And also I have some of my video clips on YouTube as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, on YouTube. Good.
Yeah,
good.
On YouTube.
Man, I gotta come out there and see you one day, man. I really do. We've been talking for a while, and I got to come out there and see you. You've always been helpful. When I call you up, you're available, and I know you in beautiful Northern California, where you got a lot of sunshine and you got a lot of stuff to do, but you make out time for us, and I really appreciate that. So I'm going to make sure, if you got any materials, I'm going to go ahead and purchase some materials off your website. I don't know if you got anything there I can get. But
yeah, you got something.
Yeah, okay. I got to do that, because you've been a great, great help. And my man Keaty over there, Living in Black, speaks highly about you all the time.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate that, brother. You know, that's what I'm here for, because I would just say this. Yeah, as a historian, many of my colleagues, they like talking to each other in these academic forums and conferences, and they read these, to me, really not-so-important papers that don't say anything about anything. So rather than spend all my time with just academe folks, there's a place for that, but some folks, that's their only focus. Because in the absence of a true historian, then what happens is these community, quote, historians emerge and tell anybody anything. So to me, the training has to be real and relevant to help teach and direct the community so that we have the best, relevant, and most up-to-date information, because the historian should do that and not a person who hasn't received any training. And not only that, everybody doesn't have to have training, but they just lack basic thinking skills. That's the other issue. You don't have to be trained to have basic thinking skills. You know.
So folks, bottom line, John Hanson was not a black president.
He said basic thinking skills.
Bottom line. And, I mean, for real, all you got to do is go to Liberia's website, Liberia Congress. They have the same picture there. That'll solve everything. If you don't believe what Professor Ampin has said, which he's been documented, you know, his stuff is stellar work. Let's go to Liberia's website and type in Senator John Hanson. And unless this man lived to be 150 years old or something like that, and still, the picture's right there. Hey, I appreciate you so much.
Well, it's for you, but I appreciate it too. And then, is it possible that those who didn't get a chance to listen live that can still listen at the audio of this?
Yes, I'm gonna upload it to either tonight or tomorrow. I'm gonna upload it, definitely.
Okay.
Yes, right, and I'll send you a copy of it too, because we want to get the word out on this. Unfortunately, we went to a museum, and it's a great museum. And I don't think the museum might have endorsed this thing. But the person who gave the tour was a great person, too. Great person. She mentioned it to the kids. And that got me to really thinking that we need to talk about this, Dan.
Because I really appreciate that, brother, because, you know, there's a lot of folks who it wouldn't mean anything to them. They'll be off telling their neighbor about the new news. But you didn't do that. You said, wait a minute, this sounds quite suspicious.
Yeah, one of the most important books I read, and I ain't going to say most important, real good for history. I brought it into work today. It was John Hope Franklin, From Slavery to Freedom, A History of African Americans. I'm sure you heard about it.
Yes, it's a classic.
Classic. And I read that as like my Bible for guidance on history. I mean, he laid down, it's a thick book. And I read that thing from front to the end. And along with other books that I'm read. And for him not to mention it, and for Carter G. Woodson, the father of black history, not to mention it, it just made me wonder, like, something don't sound right here. And so calling you up and calling my good friend Franklin Fadow, who's another historian, and to get the same type of information from both of you two, and then going on doing my own separate investigation, it confirms it. So I just hope our people do their independent research.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And just the last thing, and it's clear that we always have to look at the credibility of the source, and that's what's crucial here. So all information is not necessarily accurate, and all information cannot be treated the same way. So people just have to be a little bit more critical. Just because something is said or written doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's like anybody who happens to be a juror, just because a witness is called to the stand doesn't mean that their witness is automatically credible. We have to weigh the witness's credibility in what he or she says or presents. And in the context of the overall case, we have to look at what the person's motive was for saying what they said, and so many other things with the background. So that doesn't really require training. It just requires to be critical thinkers.
And when this kind of information gets out there and it's printed, does that really, it hits with credibility, integrity of the people that's carrying the message?
I think with the internet, there's people who, if people see things on the net, like on Wikipedia, they think that those are articles written by God. They're not written by God. These are people who who can put anything out there. There's the problem with on the online media, let's just say Wikipedia in this case, there's no standards.
Mm-hmm.
There's no background check. Anybody can post. And then if somebody doesn't like what's posted, they can change it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this is not how a serious academic environment works. You've got anonymous people saying anything they want behind the shield of a computer. Mm. And that's generally what happens. And so they won't ever reveal who they really are. If they had to do that, then they wouldn't be so bold in their attacks on black scholars and on other subjects. But as long as they can be anonymous and they become big and bold and bad, and that's generally what happens. But yeah, the problem is because it's written, people think. This is why I'm always teaching the importance of primary research, and I have, if people go to my site, they'll see that I also have a primary research training course to teach people the tools, the techniques of first-hand research methodology.
Hmm.
This is so important because then people will be able to answer their own questions about the world rather than believing some silly forwarded email that's always shocking and then all these silly things. We spend so much time with this nonsense. And I bring this up in class. It depends. Some of the U.S., mainly I'm teaching Africana studies, but with the U.S. history classes, everybody has to take my class, so the student profiles are different in terms of their ethnic background.
Okay.
So I'll deal with the John Hanson myth. Depends on how many African Americans are in the class.
Okay.
Generally, it may be out of, let's say, 40 to 50 students per class, there may be 20-25% African Americans. So I already know that not maybe all, but some of them have heard of it.
Right.
How many of you heard of this that George Washington wasn't the first president? How many of you?
I heard that.
Then I kind of, that's okay, look, let me share this with you. But it depends on who's in the room. But these are the things that we really have to promote and spread more and more. And then, when I was thinking about right before you called how to promote this more, I remember a sister had sent me an email that I forgot all about it earlier this year. Mm-hmm. I had sent her years ago the information that shows that the John Hanson myth, being the so-called first president, was nothing but a myth. And she had asked what I posted on my website. You know, after speaking with your brothers today, I'm going to do that. I'm going to post it on the site so that more good people can get the information, because we really have to help get a law passed against the spread of ignorance. And that's one of our big tasks in 2012.
All right. Good. That's a good task to work on.
Sure is.
Thank you, Professor Manuampian, man. You've always been great, man. We keep in contact. I'll send you a copy, too.
All right.
I appreciate that. Thank you, brother.
All right. God bless you. Yes, take care.
All right. Take a break. Be back. A lot to soak in right there, Rob. A lot of information to soak in. It didn't make you upset, did it?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It made me very happy. I hope it didn't make nobody else upset.
Well, it's history.
It's history and
it's documented.
Documented, factual. Hey, like Farrakhan, go look it up for yourself.
Yeah. We'll take a break. WBSLP 103.7 Muskegon. Muskegon Heights, be right back for the closing. Talk about the DJ Q89 Toys for Kids. Be right back.
All right. This one goes out to all the lovers in the house. You know what I'm saying?
This is FSNN reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, the creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression, and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality, and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at fsrn.org.
Hey, this is Jonathan Colton, and you're listening to a podcast released under a Creative Commons license. CC, baby. Check it out.
Let me ask a very simple question. Does it concern you that the government is spying on you? 30 years ago, to even ask this question would have been a scandal. If you lived through Watergate, if you read the Church Committee reports, you know the costs of unchecked government surveillance. The government is exploiting our amnesia. We did not pass the Fourth Amendment in order to protect those with something to hide. We passed that amendment, which prohibits general warrants or limitless surveillance, because we know all too well the cost of an unaccountable government. The question is not, do you have something to hide? The question is whether we control government or the government controls us. Remember, this struggle is part of who we are as a people. This country was born in rebellion because the British government was exerting too much control over American lives. We broke free and began to create a system of government meant to protect liberty. Our national history reveals a constant struggle to stay true to this value. We face one of those moments of struggle right now. Recent leaks have given us a glimpse into our government's gigantic surveillance machine. It's a machine that is eating our freedom. If this concerns you, and it should, you need to contact your representatives in Congress now. Ask them to end the tracking of Americans' domestic communications. I won't stand idly by while our civil liberties are eaten by the NSA's surveillance machine. You shouldn't either.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is Radio Intelligente Rindigena.
Dentro de su vida.